According to the Parents Television Council, there are virtually no family-friendly shows left on TV. Do you agree? Why or why not? And what, if anything, should be done about it? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, December 4th. Our guest says parents who are also concerned about too much sex, violence, and profanity on TV can use the PTC's annual list of best and worst advertisers and let their shopping dollars do some talking. What do you consider family-friendly television programming? And do you have any problem finding it? And have you seen any programming recently that you would consider a very anti-family-friendly? Would you stop shopping at any companies that advertise on shows that you don't think are family-friendly? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Melissa Henson. She directs the Grassroots Education and Advocacy for the Parents Television Council, which describes itself as a nonpartisan organization advocating responsible entertainment. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us why the Parents Television Council doesn't think there is any family-friendly TV shows anymore.
Well, our primary focus is primetime broadcast television. So when I say there's virtually no family-friendly programming, that's really what I'm talking about is, the broadcast networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, and so on, between the hours of 8 and 11 p.m. It used to be, not all that long ago, that the networks observed the idea of a family hour. That is, the first hour of prime time was set aside for programming that could be safely enjoyed by the whole family. And, you know, during the heyday of the family hour, we had things like, you know, Happy Days or Family Ties or Touched by an Angel. And there's really nothing of that sort on television today. Occasionally you can come across a talent show, reality type competition program that might be something you would sit and watch with your kids, maybe Dancing with the Stars or The Voice. But in terms of original scripted programming, there's really very little. Even though we have a lot of shows on TV right now that are about families, they're not necessarily programs that you would want to watch with young children in the room.
Yeah. And indeed, your group says some of the shows that are there this fall are especially risque.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say, and it's an observation that we've made certainly, but that others are making as well. TV critics, for example, have observed that a lot of the fall shows have dealt with, for example, formerly taboo sexual themes and topics that you wouldn't have seen discussed on primetime broadcast television. There was an episode of Scandal where they referred to the president's daughter being involved in a sex act that involved her and two boys that they called Eiffel Towering. You know, this is not sort of mainstream sexual activity that we're talking about now. We're talking about high-risk behaviors. We're talking about behavior that is very much outside of the mainstream.
Yeah, and I guess maybe I should issue a listener advisory that we will be talking about a couple of perhaps things that young children you may not want to be explaining. But there was a show called New Girl on Fox, and the lead character apparently was talking about fisting, which is a sex act.
Right. And so this is. You know, sort of thematically where we're at. We did a study a few years ago, and we found that you're more likely to see on primetime broadcast television references to extramarital, premarital, adulterous relationships on primetime broadcast television than you are likely to see references to sex within the context of marriage. And if that was true in 2008 when we released the study, I would say it's even more so, more true today than it was then.
Yeah, according to a release from the Parents Television Council, the I think it was the producer, the executive producer of New Girl, after the premiere said, we've given broadcast standards a run for their money. We got away with murder.
Right, right.
Yeah, so why do you think that some of these shows are not family friendly?
Well, do you mean what do I think has contributed
yes.
to this
mm-hmm.
trend?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think there are a couple of factors at play. One being that, you know, over time, we as a population, we tend to become desensitized to things. And so in order to get that sort of same shock reaction from the viewer, the networks are constantly upping the ante. So what shocked us 10 years ago is very commonplace today. And sort of the classic example I could think of is when NYPD Blue first debuted on ABC, there was, you know, there were rumors that they were going to be showing naked backsides. And this was during the 10 o'clock hour, the last hour of prime time. And yet people were so shocked by that. A lot of ABC affiliates initially refused to carry the program. A lot of sponsors didn't want to have anything to do with it. But they showed it, and over time people got used to it, to the extent that now you can see naked backsides during the 8 o'clock hour, what used to be the family hour. And most people don't even, you know, they don't think twice. They don't even notice it, because NYPD Blue sort of paved the way and established that this is the new normal. This is now acceptable for this medium. And I think that's what we tend to see happening with content. Is, you know, something very controversial or edgy might be introduced during the 10 o'clock hour, but eventually it finds its way into earlier time slots until it's completely pervasive during primetime hours.
So sex sells. Is that the message here?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily the message. I think it's useful to think of this kind of stunt as bait, you know, that the networks use to lure viewers. And it's effective in the short term, but I don't think it's effective for building an audience in the long term. And I think the ratings bear that out. If you look at what the most popular shows are on television, they're not necessarily the ones that are constantly pulling these kinds of stunts. You know, that might pull viewers in for an episode or a couple of episodes, but then they go back to watching things like NCIS. You know, NCIS is you know, it's a fairly tame show, and yet on an average week it might pull in 20 million viewers. And then you look at, you know, what the other networks are doing. You look at things like Dating Naked, for example, which aired this past summer. It's pulling in very low ratings numbers. So I think these kinds of stunts are perhaps effective for a short-term boost in ratings. But I don't think it's an effective strategy for drawing viewers in the long run, because, frankly, most viewers are smarter than that. You know, they want something that they want interesting characters. They want compelling storylines. They might flip the channel for this controversial scene that they've seen, you know, publicized in the news. But that's not going to sustain their interest in the long run, I don't think.
Well, we have a lot of people weighing in on the issue on our Facebook page, and I'll share some of those comments as we go along. Some who agree, some who disagree, but others who say, well, turn off the TV. You don't have to watch TV. So what about that?
Well, that is a solution, perhaps, and I think that's actually what a lot of people are doing. I think we're going to see a big change in the TV business model in the next few years, because a lot of people are fed up with what's on the broadcast networks, and so they're turning to alternatives like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, things along those lines, because they have better control over content. They have better control over what comes into their homes. But I think that the implications are much greater for the culture if we ignore it, because sexualized culture, for example, that comes through on television eventually percolates out into the wider world. It's not as if what happens on TV is confined to TV. For example, I tell people all the time, I have never watched an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, but I know the names of every member of that family, because you can't avoid it. you know, you open your Facebook feed and there's a dozen stories about the Kardashians. You go to the news and you see stories about the Kardashians. It's everywhere. It's pervasive. You drive down the street, you see billboards. You're in the checkout stand at the grocery store. You see magazine covers. So what happens on television is not confined to the television. It percolates out to the broader culture, and it has an impact.
Well, we'll talk about some of the ways to address this issue, if it concerns you, with Melissa Henson, who is with the Parents Television Council. And after we get back from news, we'll talk about the council's guide to the best and worst advertisers of the year. And whether or not you might use your holiday shopping dollars to do some talking about what you do or don't want to see on TV. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest from the Parents Television Council, who says there is very little family-friendly programming left on broadcast television. We are talking about why this is, talking about what's wrong with this, talking about what we can do about it if it bothers us. And we wonder if it bothers you. And do you think that television has gotten less family-friendly? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Melissa Henson. She directs the grassroots education advocacy for the Parents Television Council. And I wanted to talk to you, Melissa, a little bit about this advertising guide that you issued this week, or it was issued recently. Best and Worst Advertisers of 2014. What's the point of this?
Right. Well, our premise is that this content that we're talking about, it would not be possible if there weren't companies that were out there that were willing to pay for it. I think a lot of us have sort of a mistaken idea of our relationship with the broadcast networks. I think we tend to view ourselves as the consumer and the television programming as the product that's being sold to us, the consumer. And I think it's more useful to think of it in terms of us being the product being sold, and the advertisers are actually the end consumer. So when a sponsor buys time on a program, basically what the network is saying is, if you buy time on this show, I will deliver 10 million viewers to your advertisement. So we are the product that's being sold. We are the tool that the networks are using to raise revenue. And so if you think of it in that regard, I think it's easier to understand why what you see on television is not necessarily representative of what viewers at home want to see, because the networks can afford to push the envelope, just like the quote that you shared from the producer of The New Girl before the break. They can afford to do that kind of thing as long as they're reasonably assured that they're going to be able to get some advertiser dollars, and they can afford to alienate the viewers at home as long as they can still sell the ad time. So we don't actually have that much influence over broadcast content, except insofar as we can influence the people that are paying for it. The networks can afford to ignore us. They cannot afford to ignore the advertisers. And so if we can use the advertisers to leverage their unique influence with the networks, I think then we can begin to see a real change in the content that we see on television.
So what puts, say, an advertiser, for example, in the best category?
Yeah. So in years past, when we've done this list, the advertisers in the best category were the companies that were most frequently sponsoring green-lighted shows, PTC green-lighted shows. Those are family shows, clean shows with wholesome themes and so forth. We don't really have that many green-lighted shows anymore. And so now what we are basing the list on is the companies that were on our best list are companies that perhaps You know, their ads might have appeared on a show with problematic content. But when we contacted them about their sponsorship, they were at least willing to engage in a dialogue. They were willing to evaluate their advertising behavior. And in most cases, they looked at where their ads were appearing, and they said, you know what, that's not a good fit for our brand. That doesn't reflect well on our company. That's not something we want to be associated with. And they would pull their ad dollars from those shows.
And those in the worst category don't care?
Basically, yeah, they don't care. They essentially say, yeah, we know what we're paying for, and we're perfectly happy to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything different about this year's list compared to previous years? That's the difference in that there is no family-friendly programming?
Well, yeah, that's a big difference. But I would also say that what we've tried to do is we've tried to pit direct competitors against one another. So it's not merely a ranking of, you know, these 10 companies were the most frequent on the best shows, or these 10 companies were the most frequent on the worst shows. What we've done is we've said in the category of fast food, you know, all other things being equal, if you have a choice between Company A and Company B, support Company A because Company A is trying to do the right thing. And I think what that also shows is that you don't need to be controversial. You don't need to be on the edgy shows in order to be successful or in order to reach your target demographic, because they have direct competitors in that same industry that are doing the right thing, and they're still being successful.
So do you think that the boycott strategy or boycott strategy is going to make a difference?
Well, we certainly hope so. You know, it may or it may not make a difference in the advertiser's bottom line, but if we can get the word out to these companies that where you spend your ad dollars does make a difference, it does impact the culture, then I think, you know, we have the possibility of changing the way they view their relationship with the networks. I think we have a possibility of reminding them that they do have the power to influence content. And hopefully they will start to make some better choices. And I think we've seen that. You know, when we first started contacting advertisers about their sponsorship, this is going back, you know, 1997, 1998, you know, we call them and they'd say, well, we're not sponsors. Sponsorship went out in the days of, you know, Jack Benny and the Texaco All-Star Theater. We're just an advertiser. But we would say to them, no, you know, if you're buying time on this program in order to reach this particular demographic, then you are, in fact, endorsing that content. You're saying you're fine with that content. And we did start to see a shift in the way advertisers viewed their relationship. And, in fact, the Association of National Advertisers created something called the Family-Friendly Programming Forum that went out and put seed money into developing scripts for family-friendly projects that they could then advertise on. So we did see a shift in behavior. Walmart and Procter & Gamble started creating their own family-friendly entertainment because they have huge advertising budgets and not enough clean shows out there for them to put their ad dollars behind. So they started creating their own family-friendly shows that they could support. And that's the kind of thing we would like to see more of.
And we have posted the Parents Television Council's annual list of best and worst TV advertisers on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Melissa Henson, who is with the Parents Television Council. We are talking about the PTC's lament that there is very little, virtually no, family-friendly programming left on primetime broadcast television. Do you agree? Why or why not? And what, if anything, do you think should be done about it? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's go to Dan in Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hello. The thing I want to find out is why they're picking on the main stations, because you have out there now, most people have satellite dishes or they got cable, and there's a lot of stations out there that are family-friendly. But to be picking on just the stations like myself that I'm able to get over the air. It's just, it seems to be like they want to play Big Brother to me and want me to watch what they want me to watch rather than what I want to be able to watch.
Is that what you're trying to do? Hold on, Dan. Is that what you're trying to do, Melissa?
No, we're not. But here again, you know, we've got five or six channels or five or six companies. You know, we've got Universal and Disney and News Corp. They're the ones that are deciding what we're going to watch. As I said before, what we see on television very seldom represents what consumers actually want to see. You know, if what was on television was actually a reflection of what consumers want to see, there'd be a lot more stuff like, American Idol or Duck Dynasty or, you know, the shows that are most successful do tend to be the cleaner shows. And it used to be that was the default position is for the networks is to air reasonably clean stuff. And people who wanted edgier content were, of course, free to seek it out. You know, you could get premium cable channels like HBO, Cinemax, Showtime. If you wanted edgier content, you could go see R-rated movies. You had the option of seeking out edgier content. But that's now flipped. That's completely reversed. And now we're in a position where there's practically nothing on the broadcast channels for families. And so you're forced to pay for cable or premium service if you want family-friendly options. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that's as it should be. And I think probably most Americans would agree, at least based on survey results, up to 80 to 90% of Americans think that there's too much sex violence and profanity on television.
So are you asking or wanting the government to do anything about this?
No, because I think when the government gets involved, especially in situations like this, you often end up with worse results. And it's not a direct analogy, but the best analogy I can think of is, for example, when the South Park movie was scheduled to be released, and this is, again, going back several years, the MPAA did not like the title of the movie. And even though the MPAA is not a government agency in this example, we can assume that the same thing would happen if a government agency were to get involved. But the MPAA did not like the title of the movie, and so they made them go back and come up with a new name. The new name they came up with was actually far worse, far more suggestive, sexually suggestive, than the original title. But because it did not contain the specific controversial word that the MPAA did not like, they were able to get away with it. And so when the government gets involved, I think what often happens is the networks figure out a way to get around it. And in fact, that is, I think, what we have seen happen when the TV ratings were introduced. That was a way for the, it was a voluntary system, but it was a way for the networks to avoid government regulation. But since the inception of the television ratings, what we've seen is that content has gotten far worse, far faster than it did before the introduction of the TV ratings, because now the networks could say, hey, if your kid saw something inappropriate, it's not our fault, it's your fault, you're a bad parent because we rated it, and if you let your kid watch it, then you're a bad parent, and it's not our fault. And that's what's happened.
We have Cassie on Facebook who asks, why is the violence of NCIS more acceptable than the nudity of Dating Naked?
I wouldn't say that it is more acceptable, but in terms of the violence that you might typically see on television today, NCIS is really relatively tame, especially as compared to something like Walking Dead or Stalker or The Following or Hannibal. It's the sort of stylized violence that you would associate with programs of a generation ago. It's certainly not the kind of violence you would typically see on a lot of shows today.
We have Luke in Evansville, Indiana with us. Hi, Luke.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, your guest. I don't think that it's going to change. I think the network's going to keep on doing what they've been doing simply because they are looking at the millennial generation right now. And with the internet, it's becoming a more sexualized society, and they see what sells. If the you know, they're trying to compete with what's on the internet, and the internet's very, very sexualized. So I don't see this changing. If anything, I see it, you know, staying the same or perhaps getting worse over time. I, like many others, am tired of seeing many of the good shows that you used to have on TV disappear for these reality TV shows. I even stopped watching Discovery Channel because it just simply rots the brain. But I don't see it changing.
Well, Melissa, this is, he says, it's maybe even going to get worse because the networks are trying to appeal to the millennials who are growing up in a much more sexualized society.
Yeah. Well, it is no doubt true that millennials are growing up in a more sexualized society, but that's I guess it's a little bit of a chicken or the egg argument. Is it because the millennials are seeking that kind of stuff, or is it just sort of self-perpetuating? I keep going back to, you know, what is it that the market actually wants? And I see very little evidence that the market is demanding the kind of stuff that the networks are putting out there. You know, they keep saying we have to compete with, you know, cable. We have to compete with premium cable channels. And you know, you have shows that come along that are very critically acclaimed, you know, something like Game of Thrones or Boardwalk Empire. You know, these shows are critically acclaimed. They perhaps get a lot of Emmy awards or favorable reviews from television critics. But in terms of ratings numbers, you know, they might bring in 5 or 6 million viewers, and that's really small potatoes for the broadcast networks. you know, an average broadcast show is going to bring in 2 or 3 times that many viewers. And so it's a bit of a stretch, I think, for them to say that that's who their competition is. And even if it is who their competition is, I would also take issue with this notion that the reason people are viewing is because they can see, you know, naked breasts on Game of Thrones. Well, if people want to see naked breasts, they have far more options on the internet. You know, there's no shortage of naked breasts on the internet. So it's this absurd notion that the networks have to copy the edgy content, the controversial content, in order to be competitive. Maybe what's drawing people to these shows is that they have more interesting characters. Maybe what's drawing people to these shows is that the storylines are more interesting. And yet when the networks say, well, this is what we have to compete with, they seem to only see the edgy material as what they need to compete with.
Let me share Peter on Facebook, who says, someday when I have a 12-year-old, I hope to have equipped them to cope with anything they find on primetime network television, including not believing everything they see. Someone who believes in sheltering their child from all mention of sex, drugs, and violence until they are 18 will probably disagree with me. So a quick react to that.
Yeah, well, this isn't about sheltering kids. But I think it is about preserving their innocence. And I think there is a very compelling case to be made. You can educate kids about sex at a young age, but what they're seeing on television is not, it's not conducive to healthy relationships. Certainly, it's not conducive to a healthy sexual attitude. And I think that's reflected in the culture. You know, we have a generation of kids growing up who buy into this hookup culture. You know, they're not interested in committed long-term relationships. They're just interested in hookups. And you know, where does that come from? Well, you know, maybe in part it's because of what they're growing up with on television, where you see a lot of promiscuous sexuality, very seldom with any consequences. I mean, how often do you see a sexually active teenage character on television who gets pregnant, who gets an STD, who suffers from depression because the relationship went badly?
Let me jump in, because
see any kind of real life consequences.
We'll talk more after the latest news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you think television has gotten less family-friendly? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. According to the Parents Television Council, there are virtually no family-friendly shows left on TV. We wonder if you agree or not, and what, if anything, you think should be done about it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest says that parents who are concerned about too much sex, violence, and profanity on TV can use the PTC's annual Best and Worst Advertisers list and let their shopping dollars do some of their talking. So we welcome your questions for our guest, Melissa Henson, who directs grassroots education and advocacy for the Parents Television Council. And we welcome your views on this. What do you consider family-friendly television programming, and do you have any problem finding it in prime time? We're talking about that that family hour that we used to have. Let's go to Karen in Whitewater. Hi, Karen.
Yes, good morning. I have three kids at home yet, and I chose to cancel the cable and get rid of television altogether. And I have to say that it's been great. It's been terrific. I mean, with the possible exception of some sports and, of course, the Packers, I think there's little more than garbage on television. That includes cable and satellite. Mostly, though, I just find it so insidious that the advertisers target my children at such a young age. They prey on our insecurities. They turn us into mindless consumers, and that is what I really want to protect my children from at this young age. And the decision that some big corporations like Walmart make to not advertise during these, sexually explicit or profane programs doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to support Walmart, because I think they've got issues that extend far beyond advertising on these programs. I think they've got social issues that are far more hideous than that.
Melissa?
Well, that's a fair point. That's why we say, all other things being equal. So if you're indifferent between brand A and brand B, or company A and company B, what we would hope that you would support the company that is trying to make responsible advertising decisions. As I say, all other things being equal. And I think, your caller is not unlike a lot of parents out there that are cutting the cable or turning off the TV. And I think that's certainly probably a wise choice for a lot of families. But I think it's also unfortunate, because there is worthwhile stuff out there on television, concert series on PBS or documentaries. There is worthwhile stuff out there. And it's unfortunate, I think, that a lot of people are put in a position of saying, well, because there's so little that's worthwhile, it's not worth it. It's not worth the risk to have a television in our house at all. And I think it's just kind of sad that it's gotten to that point.
Well, in fact, we had a number of people on our Facebook page also saying, well, just watch PBS. Does that have a lot of family-friendly programming on it for you?
Well, yeah. I mean, PBS is a good option. It's a good alternative. As I say, you've got things like Antiques Roadshow or Austin City Limits concert series, Boston Pops and things like that. So PBS does have some good options, yeah.
We have Linda on Facebook, who says, it was very hard to find something appropriate for my 12-year-old granddaughter to watch while she was visiting recently. Red Band Society seemed to be pretty benign and safe, and Flash was also good. But going outside and building snowmen and skiing was the safest, and going on the snow train and visiting with friends. So okay. A couple of things here. I guess that going out with family and doing things was the best option. Do you know anything about Red Band Society or Flash?
Yeah, we did have an opportunity to pre-screen those shows. Flash is, in our opinion, one of the more family-friendly shows that has come along in recent years. And here again, it's been very successful for the CW network. It's also one of the cleaner shows they've offered in a long time. So I think that says a lot about what viewers actually want to see. So it's been very successful, and it is a pretty clean option. Red Band Society, I haven't heard anything too bad about it, so I think that's probably also a reasonably safe option for families as well. But probably not something we would greenlight. I mean, it is possible that there's going to be some controversial content there, not entirely appropriate at all times for young kids, but it is one of the safer options out there, I think.
And again, part of your lament is that the family-friendly programming is not on the broadcast networks as opposed to cable, because you'd like to see it on the public airwaves.
Right, right. What we've seen is a lot of fragmentation of the audiences. And so when we say there's not much family programming, a lot of people say, well, what about Disney Channel? What about Nickelodeon? But those channels really aren't family targeted. They're kid targeted. So usually what happens is mom and dad send kids off into another room to watch their Disney Channel programming rather than sitting down watching Disney Channel programming with their kids, because they're really not written to appeal to the whole family in the same way that shows, 5, 10, 15 years ago would have been written with the entire family in mind.
David on Facebook says, I don't watch any of the comedy or drama series, just no interest. There are lots of cable stations that don't really expose one to the crassness of the type of programming that is being questioned. We watch a lot of the Food Network, the Travel mm-hmm. Channel, History, a lot of movies that we buy. Kids also enjoy watching the same stuff, thankfully.
Yeah. I think that's what a lot of people find themselves doing, because there's nothing on the broadcast networks for them. They find themselves turning to cable. But of course, cable also introduces a whole host of other problems, because in order to get the three or four channels that you do want to watch with your family, you have to pay for a whole package of, maybe 50 or more channels, most of which you will probably never watch. And cable bills keep going up. And that's part of the reason why we've been advocating for cable choice, the unbundling of cable channels, so that you can pick and pay for only the channels that you want to watch and not have to pay for channels and subsidize, in fact, content that you don't like on channels that you don't watch.
Well, we have about 5 more minutes with our guest, Melissa Henson, who is with the Parents Television Council. She directs grassroots education and advocacy. And we're talking about the lack of family-friendly shows left on broadcast TV. And we wonder if you have trouble finding what you consider family-friendly television programming, and whether you think this is a problem or not. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll talk some more about what if anything, that can be done about this. But we did have some Facebook people, Facebook commenters, who are kind of, what's the big deal? A lot of just turn off the TV and that sort of thing. You had mentioned that turning off the TV was not necessarily everyone's answer, and that what is on TV bleeds into our culture, into our society, even if we don't watch it. You brought up the example of Kim Kardashian being everywhere. As one example, what is the harm of, Kim Kardashian being on magazine covers and the like?
Well, in 2007, the American Psychological Association released a study looking at sexualized culture and what that does to girls in particular, though it impacts boys as well. And what they found is that there is a whole host of problems related to a sexualized culture, and by that I mean sexuality being inappropriately imposed on a person, which is
what happens quite often with some young teen stars, for example, where they're highly sexualized at a very young age, or where a person's value comes only from their sexuality to the exclusion of other characteristics. And I think you could argue that that's the case with Kim Kardashian, where her perceived value comes from her sexuality alone. So this highly sexualized culture, when girls are exposed to it in advertising, on television, in movies, and music videos, magazine covers, all these different media that they're exposed to, there's increased risk for eating disorders, there's increased risk for depression, increased acceptance of sexual harassment, increased acceptance of violence in relationships, fewer girls pursuing careers in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, lower academic achievement among girls. So there is a host of real world consequences for this sexualized culture that kids are growing up in. We have kids getting exposed to pornography online at a much younger age, and television helps to normalize that. I can think back and remember an episode of Friends where Chandler and Joey were afraid to leave their apartment because they were getting free porn from cable, and they were afraid that if they turned off the TV or changed the channel, they would lose their free porn. So this sort of thing is normalized on television and encourages kids to experiment in ways that I think are detrimental to their health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
There are studies that have shown that kids who are exposed to a lot of sexual entertainment content at a young age are more likely to become sexually active earlier in life than peers with less exposure. They're going to have more sexual partners over the course of their lifetime. That puts them at greater risk for an unplanned pregnancy, STDs, depression, and so forth. So as I say, there are real-world consequences, and I think the solution is not so simple as just changing the channel.
Yeah, and we need to, in our final minute, what is part of the solution in our final minute?
Well, I think we need to, as I say, put pressure on the advertisers to help encourage the development of more family-friendly programming, and we need to vote with our remote. We need to vote with our wallets and support the kind of programming that we want to see more of.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Melissa Henson directs grassroots education and advocacy for the Parents Television Council, which describes itself as a nonpartisan organization advocating responsible entertainment. We have a link to its website and the advertisers list on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Brianne Chasseau and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We'll talk about the person of the year coming up. Tomorrow at this time, I want you to tell me where to go for December. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.